Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
This is almost like a weekly occurrence with you. You know, we have to start the show by having a dig about something or a moan about something. And, you know, you always throw a custard pie on it. Anyway, welcome to the second Shoot the Defence of the year. And it's an FA Cup review. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by the regulars, in inverted commas, Yannickis and Rodri Giggs. And another debutant, co-host of the D&D Football Factory, D-Man, aka Darren. Mate, welcome to Shoot the Defence.
What's up, dude? Hey. Cheers, mate. Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Just finished watching City put away Bristol City, so yeah, ready to go.
Excellent. Well, mate, before we kick off the show and I say hello to these guys, tell us more about your show, what it's all about.
Yeah, it's called the D&D Footy Factory. We're on Top FM 95.5. We're just a weekly show that debates everything football related on a weekend, Saturday mornings 10 till 12. We're on the Twitter as well, at DD Footy Factory. Providing a bit of banter, insight, a bit of everything really. Just as the season progresses, we've got, I'm the Newcastle fan, my co-host is a Liverpool fan, and we've got a couple others, Liverpool and Arsenal fans, so we've got a wide range of topics to discuss and ring around and all of that stuff every week. So yeah, it's interesting. Tune in.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're on 10 till 12 on a Saturday, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, see, look, what's the point in watching Soccer AM? We've got this to listen to.
This is it.
What do you want to...
We're better than the guys at Soccer AM. We're rivaling Jeff Stelling and the boys as well.
See? There you go. Talk over them. At least you make more sense.
Yeah.
You make more sense.
That's it.
Excellent. Well,
definitely.
Rod, welcome back to the show, mate. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good, thanks. Quiet, but enjoyable. Just getting back to running things. January's a bad month, isn't it? So just get January out of the way and I'm rocking.
That's right. And Hollands haven't got back to you, have they, about this pie thing? Because we've been tweeting them for the past couple of weeks and they're just ignoring us.
Obviously, I haven't got the pie technique, you know, because I've got an athlete's technique, so they're obviously not having it.
Rod, I think you should try a different pie, mate. Try a different brand.
So Pucker Pies, give them a shout.
Yeah, but they're already sponsoring someone, aren't they? Non-league teams? I'm sure they're sponsoring non-league teams, aren't they?
Oh, okay.
Well, find a different pie and let us know. Which pie should Rodri Giggs eat from now on? Let's put a poll out.
Poll, yeah. That's a good idea.
There you go, see? And how are you?
I'm good, mate.
Your beard is now black. You're using Just For Men.
It's going to be one of them digs tonight, yeah? Have you started already, yeah?
Well, listen, Rod hasn't said anything.
Yet.
Yet's probably warmed up. Yet's been the operative word. Excellent.
It's going out the weekend, so that's fine.
Anyway, let's talk about the football because I don't think you guys want to listen to us rambling about beards and pies and yeah. So the third round of the FA Cup is one of the most hotly anticipated events in the English football calendar as it's produced numerous giant killing moments. From Ronnie Radford's long range strike for non-league Hereford in 72 to 37-year-old Mickey Thomas's free kick for Wrexham in 91. The FA Cup third round never ceases to produce memorable moments. In fact, Thomas's winner for Wrexham was against Division 1 champions Arsenal, and this weekend the Gooners suffered another shot defeat. Managerless Nottingham Forest, or should I say managerless at the time Nottingham Forest, who lay 14th in the Championship, dumped the holders out of the Cup in a 4-2 win. Now Darren, I know Wenger made 9 changes from the side that drew with Chelsea midweek, and it wasn't full of unfamiliar faces as the starting lineup had 7 internationals. In fact, this was actually a similar team sheet to what Arsenal fans are used to seeing in the Europa League, mate. So what excuses do they have up their sleeve this time?
I don't think they've got any excuses. Sorry, I want to start with this one. I don't think they've got any valid excuses that they can make. Like you said, it's a similar side they fielded to the Europa League. And I think between them, they had 700 Premier League appearances. So it was an experienced side.
Wow.
And the average age of Forest team was younger than the Arsenal team. So, and if you look at the game, and to be fair to Arsenal fans, they ain't making any complaints. They were outplayed by Forest, second to every ball. And when they had the ball, they were mediocre. So they deserved to lose. Their centre-back, Mertesacker, was on the ropes for the whole game. Rob Holding looked out of his depth. I don't know what's happened to him. He's regressed on the winger. It was just a bit of an embarrassment, really. I mean, it will be, we find out he's been clubbing 48 hours before, which didn't help. What else can we really say? You know, the only thought, I mean, the team was strong enough, I think we can all agree, to beat Nottingham Forest, who had no manager, like you said. And the thought of the bench wasn't strong enough. That's my only thought against Wenger. The bench wasn't strong enough. So we expect a team like Arsenal to beat a side like Forest, but this is the FA Cup. Anything can happen, we can all agree. So if things are not going your way, you should be able to bring on your Lacazettes, your Ozils, your Wilshere to make a difference. They brought on that, is it Akpom or something like that? Whatever his name is? Yeah. He's hardly going to strike fear. Akpom, sorry, yeah. Hardly going to strike fear into the opposition. So they deserve to lose and everything they get with it. I don't know what you guys think about writing as well, but it was embarrassing.
Well, if you look at the bench, the only senior player, or the player with the most experience on that bench, was Callum Chambers. I think that just says it all in terms of Arsenal's approach to the game, their mentality, and how they feel about the FA Cup. I mean, let's be 100% honest. I know they're in the League Cup semi-final, but as you mentioned, City beat Bristol City, so you've got City are probably the favourites, Chelsea are second favourites, and you've got Arsenal. Okay, if they don't win that, then there's the Europa League. But then you've got teams like Atletico Madrid, you've got Napoli, you've got Borussia Dortmund. So Arsenal are looking at maybe fourth favourites for the Europa League. Then there's top four. Yeah. Look at the teams that are competing for the top four. City are going to win the league. Probably then it's between United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal and Spurs. So, you know, their season could effectively be over in February, really. Think about it.
We said that before about Arsenal, right?
Well, we say December, but yeah. Yeah. What do you reckon? What do you make of their performance, if you can call it that?
Abysmal, to be honest. I just think it comes to lack of desire, lack of hunger, lack of passion. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I feel sorry for the Arsenal fans that travelled to go and watch that. I mean, to go and watch your team away to a championship side and not put up a fight or show kind of any passion to the fans that travelled, I think is atrocious, to be honest with you. And it's funny how kind of things can change, because the FA Cup has saved Wenger's job probably twice, maybe three times. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the FA Cup doesn't mean nothing to Arsenal anymore. And it's, and another point as well, the League Cup that Wenger's never won as a manager, who's deserted all these years, all of a sudden, that's more important than the FA Cup? So, I don't know. For me, for a club that doesn't really win trophies, apart from the FA Cup, to kind of neglect it like that, I think it was an embarrassment.
Neglected. Well, that's a strong word. Rod, did Arsenal neglect the FA Cup? Did they turn their back on it?
Well yeah, because they put a week inside out for the semi-final of the Carling Cup, or whatever cup it is it's called. So yeah, and you know, I'm sure Arsene Wenger didn't put players out thinking, expecting to lose that game, but you know, like I said, the fight and the attitude of the players and obviously good coaching on Forrest's part by picking out Mertesacker and punishing him. So, yeah, it was probably a difficult night for the Arsenal fans, and obviously, as Jan says, that cup has saved his job a few times, so it's hard to think that he's just give up on it for a different cup.
And I think that game was ideal for someone like Lacazette, who's not scored a lot recently. This could have been a game to build up his confidence, get a few goals and then start going on a run. But to not even put him in a squad, I think is a bit strange to me. Like, that would have been a prime opportunity for him to get a couple goals and to get his confidence back.
I think I agree. I think that's the biggest surprise. The fact that they didn't have your Ozils on the bench, your Sanchez's. All right, you take them with you. If you don't want to use them, that's fair enough. But when you're 3-2 down with 5-10 minutes to go, that's where you bring them on. Mm. Get a replay, all right. It might not be ideal, but you're still in the cup.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, the Welbeck's goal, which the goalkeeper fumbled, yeah. And he did very well to react to score. And that's when I thought, hang about, they might turn this round, even get a draw.
But that's where they needed the stronger players to come off the bench. With us, 10 minutes, Forrest are tiring, and they had 10 men.
Yeah, that's right.
Poor, very poor.
All right, well, look, let's talk about Forrest then. Oh, go on.
Usually players out if you're chasing for the league or you're doing well in the Champions League, but you know, they're out of the league more or less, so I don't understand why they were like Jan said, they were totally not in the squad. You have to have a backup plan if you're going to have a weakened squad like that, and obviously with experience you'd expect him to have that, and he didn't. So you know, he's become a bit tiresome now there. Now he can feel for the Arsenal fans, like Jan says. I feel sorry for him because they're going through the mire again, and historically they're not really good in January, so it's, you know, we're only at the start of it.
Can I just add something very quickly still? He's put that side out in the FA Cup, right? That's kind of the same side he's used in the Europa. So what, is he not interested about the Europa either then? Because, so where does he play his strongest team? In the league? They're fifth. So where
he's got to play them in the League Cup, surely.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Where is Arsenal's priority like this year? Mm. I mean, it's a little bit, is it the League Cup? Does he want to win that as in the older trophies he won and then kind of walk out in the summer? I mean,
it's a bit confusing. In his defence, I can say you're in a semi-final of a League Cup, so you've got a better chance of winning that cup now than the FA Cup in the third round, because anything can happen in the future rounds. But in that, not to his defence, but I can understand why he fielded a weakened team then rather than Wednesday rather than tomorrow. So I think he's going to field a very strong team tomorrow against Chelsea.
You know what?
He needs the trophy.
He did it last season against Preston. Do you remember that? They were a goal down and they got lucky to get a 2-1 win.
That's right.
And that's when they should have gone out. Yeah. And this season, it's come to bite him on the backside because he does it every third round. For the past few years, he's been doing it and he's been getting away with it. Mm. But Nottingham Forest, you know, at the City Ground, fans were obviously up for it. And the pace that they had up front, Brereton, is ridiculous. But let's talk about Forest. I mean, I know they've got somewhat of a, I don't know, like a love-hate relationship with the FA Cup. I mean, I know Eric Lehigh continued this third round tradition of unlikely heroes with two goals. But this was a disciplined and spirited performance, which, I don't know, which areas would you say Forrest got it right?
I think the lad that you just said, the striker.
Yeah.
The fact that they used his pace and they used his ability against Metasaka, which was highlighted that somebody, I think, said that ended Metasaka's career, you know, a bit what Rashford did to Demichelis, isn't it, at City. So I just think it was just the all-round performance. You know, still, as a Premiership club going to a Championship side or whatever side, they're going to be up for it. Mm. It doesn't matter who you are, what kind of level it is. You know, you got to win the battle. You got to go there prepared with the right attitude, the right mentality. Forest had that. For a team that's struggling, you know, it's the old cliche, but it was their cup final. You know, Arsenal coming into town, they're struggling in the Championship, they need the lift. You know, it's on the BBC, it's on the telly, people are going to be watching. You know, you play 70%, all of a sudden you're on the telly, you play 90% to your maximum, you raise your levels of your game. And I think Forest were brilliant on the day. They were, you know, they were hungrier, they were stronger. On the, you know, they caused problems on the wide as well. They were compact. They had the two banks of four as well, which didn't allow Arsenal to play their football. Tactically, they got it right as well. You got to applaud them for that.
Mm-hmm. And they got a good mix of experience at youth, which makes you wonder why they're doing so poorly in the Championship. Look, if you've got players like Michael Mancien, who did very well in the Bundesliga with Hamburg. You got Lehigh, that played for Aston Villa. Vaughan, who's in the Premier League with Blackpool. Mm-hmm. And then you've got youngsters like, you know, Des Walker's son, Tyler Walker came on, he's got bags of pace. So
Clough as well, got there.
That's right. So they've got a very, very fine balance there. And Rod, Martin Keown said Brereton ended Mertesacker's career. And to be fair, he's got a point. Brereton tormented him all night. As you said before, mate, pace kills.
Yeah, it does. And obviously, like I said before, they've obviously been good coaching. They've obviously pointed it out to him and said, there was one point when he's gone inside and Mertesacker, it was like the type turning, so he's obviously he trains with good players, so he obviously is coming to the end of his career. His teammates will know that because they train with him every day, and obviously, you know, Martin Keown didn't pull any punches, and he's probably right.
That's right. And Nottingham Forest have moved to appoint Aitor Karanka as their head coach. Now, I need to know from you guys, is this a wise move given he's proven at Championship level, or is it a gamble because A, he's had a bit of a fractious relationship in the past with senior Middlesbrough players, and B, a certain Marinakis as chairman. Well, you know about Marinakis. Come on, you give us your opinion first on
what, on Karanka?
On Karanka and the appointment itself, and is it a good move for him?
I think it's a good appointment. I think the fact that he knows the Championship, the fact that Forest have got this kind of traditional kind of style of playing decent football, and Karanka does that, you know. You know, obviously with his time at Real Madrid, he's learned as a coach, and I think he did quite well at Middlesbrough, to be fair to. Obviously, they got into the Premiership. I think he'll do well. I think he'll stabilise him this season. I don't think Forest will go down. I think they're too good to go down. And then if the money's there, like Martin Agassi said, if they've got money to spend, I think he'll invest wisely. I think it's a good appointment, in my opinion.
Right. Now, you mentioned the chairman. We mentioned the chairman.
Yep.
Will he be patient? Because we know Olympiacos, we saw what he did with a few other managers. Who was it that he sacked after?
Getspire.
No, he sacked him after
a month, didn't he?
No, it was a manager. Was it a Portuguese manager, wasn't it?
Palo Bento.
Did he sack him after
losing two games in a row or something like that?
Three in a row. They were top of the league by 12 points or something. And he sacked him after losing three games in a row. Yeah.
We know that happens in Greece. I don't know over here. I think
Frank de Boer.
As an exception. Four games is an exception. You don't hardly see it as much where a manager goes in after four games, they'll sack him. You know, in leagues like Greece, Cyprus and things like that, they've got no patience. I think Forrest will be patient with Karanka, I really do. I think his ideas and his philosophy and his mentality, I think he'll do well.
Okay.
I really do.
Darren, I know as a Newcastle fan, you probably didn't like seeing Middlesbrough in the Premier League, and especially getting promoted under Karanka. What do you make of his appointment, mate?
Well, you're right about them getting promoted, how I feel about that. But Karanka, he's a good manager. I just think there's a bit of... Don't get me wrong, every successful manager has to have a touch of arrogance. But I think he's one of those that, because he spent that time with Jose and stuff, he's got a bit too big for his boots. And when he fell out with the players at Borough, I think he walked out one game, didn't he? Or something like that, refused to come back, and then he came back. Don't get me wrong, he'll do a job for Forest. I think he'll, like I said, he'll steady the ship, he'll keep them tight at the back, sort of the defence, and possibly in next season get them promoted. But I don't think it's a long-term answer for a team like Forest. I don't think, especially with that chairman like you mentioned, I think they're going to come to loggerheads at some point, and I think it's going to be quite interesting, shall we say.
Yeah,
but I think for now it's a decent appointment, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a chairman that slapped you, Rule Cissé. He's crazy. You know. Rod,
yeah, anyone that does that is a madman.
There you go. Now, Rod, Karanka, he did very well at Middlesbrough, getting them promoted to the Premier League. As I mentioned before, he had a bit of a torrid relationship with the likes of Stuart Downing. Do you think that he will get on with the senior figures at Forest?
I echo most of what Jan said, to be honest. He's done a good job at Middlesbrough. He's obviously been schooled well at Real Madrid. It's just like you said, will he get the time with his chairman, because he's a bit trigger happy if you go through a little slump? Has he got the mentality? Will he have the senior players? It's all a question mark at the minute, but if he gets the time, I'm sure he'll do a good job like he did at Middlesbrough, because he's obviously a good coach, stroke manager.
There you go. Right, Sean Mikulski scored an 89th minute winner for Newport County, which dumped Leeds United out of the cup. Now, Rod, a small club from South of Wales knocking Leeds out of the cup. You must be pleased.
Yeah, it was a good result. I actually know the manager, Flinney, when I played in League of Wales. He's a good bloke. It's a good win. Obviously, the conditions didn't help Leeds, which would sometimes, as we say, is the leveller. Which it obviously was, and you know, they had the little bit of luck, and it was a good day out for them, and obviously a good tie in the next round. So it was a good day all round, and I'm pleased for them.
Happy days. Well, mate, you just said, you know, the environment that they played in Leeds, you could tell they didn't like it. It was a cold afternoon, the pitch was really bad. In fact, it was so bad that some players can't actually stay on their feet. They smelt blood from the off, didn't they, Newport?
Yeah, well, obviously, Flinney, he's been at the lower leagues. He's spent times at Bradford. He knows what it's all about. And he would have said to the boys before, you know, get into these lads. They'll be here. They won't want to play on this pitch. They'll be humming and hiring. They won't be 100%. Get stuck into them. Obviously, it was freezing cold as well, which the gloves were out for most of the Leeds players. So that tells you a lot straight away. So, and like I say, they had a little bit of luck, and they got the result.
Yeah, big win, and they've got a big draw in the next round. Right, let's talk about another team, Coventry City. Their 2-1 win over Stoke was more convincing than the scoreline suggests. I mean, let's be honest, they could have been 3-0 up before Charlie Adam drew them level from the penalty spot.
Yeah.
To be fair, at no point did I see Coventry putting more than 8 men behind the ball.
It just shows that if you're brave and your ambition, and you can get at teams, you can get results, and that's what Coventry
did. Well, they battered them. They actually battered them. Before Charlie had them equalised, they battered them.
No, I agree. They smelt blood, a bit like Newport with Leeds. The fact that Stoke, no confidence at all. The manager, you know, was he going to go, was he going to stay? And Coventry went for it, and fair play to them. You know, they're not having the greatest times in their league as well. So, again, another cup final for them, you know. Stoke going to the Rioja Arena. They turned up, they turned them over, and it's a brilliant result. And as we know, it was the last straw for Mark Hughes as well. So, but yep. You've got to applaud Coventry. You've got to applaud these teams that go and have a go. There's no point sitting back against the big boys and waiting for something to happen. Go for it, you know. You might not never play against a club like that again. So take your chance, and it shows that when you're brave, you can achieve kind of big
fortune
things.
Fortune favours the brave. There absolutely. You go. And Darren, the loss at the Rico was the nail in the coffin for Hughes' tenure Stoke boss. Now, the board have made the right decision, haven't they?
I don't think you can argue with the decision to sack him. Look, Stoke have been in trouble for a long time now. We know they're struggling in the league. It's just not worked for Mark Hughes, and they slipped into the relegation zone. He put a target on his own back when he rested all those players against Chelsea and they got slapped 5-0. Mm-hmm. He had to win that next game against my Newcastle boys, and gladly he didn't. But I think it's more the last two games, the Newcastle game and the Stoke game, they've been played off the park. So they haven't even deserved a draw or a point or anything. Newcastle should have been out of sight before Stoke scored. I mean, before Newcastle scored, they hit the bar. I think they played them off the park. Like I said, Coventry in the FA Cup should have been out of sight. So it's the performances as well as the results that's gone against Hughes. I do feel a bit sorry for him because he's done all right. If you look at what he's done for Stoke, I mean, from the days of Tony Pulis when everyone hated Stoke, their style of play, he brought in new players. He brought in the likes of Bojan, Afolai, Shaqiri, just to change the style of play for Stoke. And it was working to us for a certain extent because for the last couple of seasons, they've been quite comfortable. But they haven't kicked on, and he's had to pay the price. And as harsh as it is, it's no surprise that he went after the Coventry game. I mean, to be outclassed by Coventry City, no disrespect, has to be the nail in the coffin. So, no, it's not a surprise. But who do you bring in to replace him? I don't know. I really don't know.
Tony Pulis
is at Middlesbrough, isn't he? He's at Middlesbrough, isn't he?
Go full circle, yeah. It's I don't know.
Well, so here's an interesting one. Who's the Coventry City manager? Mark Robbins.
Yeah,
Mark Robbins. And who was the Stoke manager at the time? Mark Hughes, right? Who set up Mark Robbins...
To save
Ferguson's job.
That's right.
So effectively, Mark Robbins can keep your job and end your job. <Yeah. as well.
laughs> Legend.
Just keep away from Mark Robbins. Like a voodoo doll. Oh, blimey. Right, gents, the three giant killings over the weekend leads us onto our bite back section where we ask members of our group page, what's your favourite FA Cup giant killing moment? I'm going to read as many as I possibly can in a short period of time. Ben Burnell, Luton beating Norwich with Rendell scoring the winner. He's a Luton fan, obviously.
Yeah,
Jamie Cannon said, not so much a moment, but as a run to the semi-final. My hometown, Chesterfield in 97, beat Bolton away, Forest at home and Wrexham at home before facing Middlesbrough at Old Trafford. Mention the name David Ellery in our town and your new favourite word, I can't repeat my new favourite word, has made it there. They'll call him that. Travis is a West Ham fan, says Di Canio at Old Trafford, and then put the two eyes as if he's going to look at me. Cheers, cheers, Trav. Dan DeLuca, there's loads, but Wigan in last minute header to beat Man City at the time when the cup was struggling. I think that's a very good one. In fact, that's actually my pick. Anyway, Craig Jones, being a 10-year-old and walking into school after Millwall had beaten Arsenal 2-0 in 95 was immense, only to be bettered by beating Chelsea in the next round. The fact that we even got to the final in 2004 was a miracle itself, but 95 for how amazed I was as a child. Rick says Wrexham versus Arsenal 92, Sutton United in the Vauxhall Conference knocking out Coventry in 89. Admirable mention goes to Burnley when they knocked out Liverpool in 2005, where Jimmy Traoré scored an outrageous own goal. And Mike mentions the 1988 FA Cup final, the crazy gang beating the Culture Club. Possibly the greatest example of the haves being the beaten by the have-nots. Also, the first penalty missed in the FA Cup final, and first goalkeeping captain lifting the cup. We had Bobby Gould a while back speaking about the FA Cup final. That was an intriguing story. And Terry Phelan, Giggsy, mate. So, yeah. Darren, your beloved Newcastle scored 3 goals in 9 minutes to put away Luton, but it wasn't a comfortable 3-1 win, was it?
Far from it, to be honest. But listen, as a Newcastle fan, you'll know you got to take these wins where you can. Like, usually, I was expecting to lose this game, I'll be honest, because it'd be just like Newcastle to go out to a lower league opposition early rounds. We never really get put together a cup run. So to beat them 3-1, I mean, I don't know if they deserved anything out of the game. They had a goal disallowed, which arguably should have stood. But listen, the main thing is we're through to the next round. Unfortunately, the draw hasn't been kind to us. But yeah, anything's possible. But listen, any win this season for Newcastle is a bonus. I'm just focusing on staying up this season. League Cup was a disappointing one to go out when we did. But yeah, on to the next round. Can't complain. Beat them 3-1. That's all that matters, the scoreline, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. The first couple of goals were quite sloppy, but you take them, innit?
Oh yeah, definitely. Very sloppy. Poor goalkeeping. Poacher's goals, to be fair. Shelby got on the score sheet. And a good day, I think it was FA Cup day before, our keeper, I think, Woodman, I think it is.
That's right.
And we managed to rotate a little bit, which is promising. But yeah, uncomfortable as it was, I'm just happy we got the win.
So what's happened to Yossi Perez now? Because he seems to be getting the goals. He went quiet for a while, and there he is.
Yeah, well, for a long while. And I was listening to your previous show. You talk about how Newcastle struggle for goals, and don't get me wrong, he's not the answer, but his confidence is up. He tends to go on a few streaks here and there, but not for long enough, if that makes sense. So I don't expect him to score again for the next 8 or 9 games, if I'm honest. Wow. But listen, playing, he's scored a few this season. Long may it continue.
Thing is, Darren, he's been playing a lot deeper when I've seen him play.
I'm not sure what Rafa doesn't seem to trust him up front. I don't know what it is, but I mean, I'd give him more opportunity up front. Him rotate between him and Gale. But yeah, you're right. He's been playing a deeper role. Mm. I think it's because he tracks back. He works very hard, so he can get up and down. I think that's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah, true. Definitely. I just think he's better off playing further forward, in my opinion.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely, I agree. Yeah.
Excellent. So Liverpool's £75 million man, Virgil van Dijk, scored the win in front of the Kop in the Merseyside derby, while Jesse Lingard is in the type of form you'd expect from a £75 million player, even though he isn't. Rod, we won't discuss the Firmino-Holgate incident because A, nothing has been reported to the FA, and B, everything we know is hearsay, so I think we'll just avoid that for the time being. But aside from that incident, it wasn't much of an exciting game, was it? Is that Big Sam's fault again?
Yeah, most probably. You know, you can't go to Anfield and play in your own game. They'll tell you to pieces. So it's like Big Sam likes to do, men behind the ball and stuff the game out, which he did. He, you know, they had probably the best goal of the game, which was a superb goal from Liverpool's own corner. But no, it was a boring game, but to get a result, not to please everyone.
Sorry, I was just looking at him.
You're looking at me funny.
Yeah, I was looking at him when you said you can't go to Liverpool and play them at their own game because you get beaten. This guy was moaning that we played for a draw. Anyway.
Everton scored.
Everton scored. Okay, yeah, they scored.
And they attacked.
Yeah. Everton scored with who was in goal?
Doesn't matter who was in goal.
Zach Morris, yeah? Saved by the bell. Okay.
Irrelevant.
No, whatever. Right, let's talk about United then. Good performance. Gets an informed derby side, second in the Championship. They left it late, but job done.
Yeah, it was a good performance. United played well on the night, created a lot of chances, played well. Going back to the Arsenal game.
Boo.
United had players on the bench that came on and changed it. The fact that Lukaku came on and made the difference while United were struggling was kind of the difference. Where you play your 11 and it's not working out, you've got the manpower on the bench to come on and make that difference. And that was the key as well, the fact that United had a bench, so to speak, to come on and change the game. But United deserved to win. They created a lot of chances and it was a good performance.
What do you make of Derby County then? Because Gary Wright, I think he's done a fantastic job.
Signed a new contract as well today.
Good, yeah. Good.
I rate him as a manager.
Absolutely. I think he's good. Remember, we were talking about this last season with Birmingham City when he was manager. They were close to the playoff spot. He got sacked. They brought in Zola.
Ludicrous.
It was absolutely crazy. Yeah, Mark was spitting venom.
Yeah, so was I. And I wasn't a Birmingham fan at the time, you know.
At the time. So I think he's done remarkably well. And the thing is, what I admire about him is that he's not afraid to take a gamble on experienced players that perhaps you'd think maybe are slightly coming to the end of their career, like, you know, Carson in goal, Tom Huddleston.
Nugent, who's got their
return. They've got the centre-half that was at Hull as well, Curtis
Davis.
I know he's still quite young, relatively young, he's talking about defence, but... You know, and Joe Ledley. I think he's in Joe Ledley there as well, yeah. And Vidray took the gamble on him.
Huddleston.
Well, I said Huddleston. You obviously weren't listening. See, I'm sat right next to you and you're not listening. You're not listening.
You said Curtis Davis.
You're just not paying attention.
Okay.
But anyway, it's okay. But Gary Wright, we like Gary Wright.
We do.
We like him. We like him. Do you like him, Rod?
Yeah, he's a good manager. And yes, sometimes when managers... When manage like that, he's been a good coach, and obviously he's signed a good deal. Derby have obviously got a good manager.
Shall I tell you why he signed a new deal? Because I think Wales were after him.
Serious, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Why not Stoke take a chance on Gary Wright?
Well, that could be another reason.
Well, and the decent report with Stoke as well, so he's obviously he's good at what he does, because every time there's a job comes up, his name's in the hat, so...
Well, Rod, you've just got to look at Birmingham, what's happened to them since he's left.
Well, that's obviously bad management at the top. Mm. They're obviously a couple of points off the playoffs, thought that the grass was greener in Zola when he didn't really do anything in management when he was at West Ham, so I don't know why they went for him when Rout was doing a really good job, so, yeah... Sorry, Mark Meredith, but yeah.
I thought it was Mark Hughes for a second. Yeah. Oh, Leslie. Well, look, they got Zola, their trophy manager. I mean, he's about the size of a trophy, like you. So, yeah. Sorry, I had to get that one. Right, gents, if you look at the fourth round draw, can you see any shocks on the card? I know Spurs are going to Newport County, United are going to Yeovil, Liverpool face West Brom at home, Man City away to possibly Cardiff or Mansfield, is it?
Mansfield, yeah.
Any possible shocks there? I can't think of any other.
Peterborough Leicester,
yeah, that could be one, because they beat Villa, didn't they, and convincingly as well.
Yeah,
that's if Leicester.
I think that's my tip. Yeah.
If Leicester beat Fleetwood, that's a good shout. If
they that's beat, true.
They got the replay as well. So yeah, can you see any others?
Not with the big boys.
Be straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty straightforward, even with dodgy pitches.
And dodgy.
Are we assuming that Chelsea are going to beat Norwich?
Yeah, they'll beat.
I think so.
Yeah,
3-0.
I think so. 3-0. Okay, that's an interesting one. Put that down on your coupon.
I'm going to go for a Newport draw
against Spurs, and then take them to Wembley. Yeah.
Back to Wembley, yeah, and then get battered. Yeah.
Well, that'd be a good story for them, though. It'd be a good story for
them.
And
a good revenue. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, look, before I go into the other news bit, forgive my rudeness. I didn't ask you guys what your FA Cup shocks were. What's your favourite FA Cup shock?
Favourite?
Yeah.
It's not much of a favourite, but it's one that I enjoyed. I don't know if you remember Southampton being 3-0 up away to Tranmere and Paul Rideout getting a hat-trick and turning it around and beating them 4-3.
97?
Yeah.
Around that time,
yeah. It's just one that sticks in my mind. I think they had Hoddle in charge, didn't they? Southampton at the time?
I don't know, if I'm not mistaken. You tell me.
Yeah, and I think Barlow got the winner. And they beat him 4-3.
Barlow, he's with Everton.
That's the one. Yeah. Just something not that Gary sticks Barlow. In my
mind. Rod, what's your favourite moment?
Sticks out is Mickey Thomas against Arsenal for me.
Wrexham, yeah.
That free kick when he just... Yeah. It's always stuck out. And Wigan, like before, Wigan beating City, that was a shock. And Wimbledon beating Liverpool as well, because Liverpool with the players they had, that was a definite one of the biggest shocks. Yeah.
Southampton as well beating United in the cup final, Division 2 against Division 1.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Darren, what's yours, mate? I'm not going to mention Stevenage. Don't worry.
yeah, forget that one. I was gonna say Wigan beating City in the final, but also because I've got so many Liverpool fans, when Oldham beat them 3-2 in that same year, I believe it was, and you had the likes of Sterling, Suarez, and Sturridge players starting and Gerrard on the bench. So to me, that was a sweet moment for me. Yeah,
that's another one. I completely forgot about that one. Actually,
what's yours?
Well, I said before, it was the Wigan, the cup final.
Yeah.
Because they got relegated that season.
Yeah.
And they went on to beat... City didn't win the league, they came second, didn't they?
Yeah, they didn't win nothing that year.
So...
City got sacked after that, didn't
he? Yeah, Mancini right. went... Right.
And I think that proved what we were saying throughout the whole season that year, that City players had down tools. If you can't win an FA Cup final... No disrespect to Wigan, because they were fantastic on the day, but if you can't win an FA Cup final against a team that's got relegated... Then I really don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. But you know what? I think that and Wimbledon. I think Wimbledon more because of their story, because they came from Division 4 and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an incredible. It's this FA Cup, isn't it?
It's the magic.
The magic. Right. In other news, the fun part. Roma's 2-1 home defeat to Atalanta saw them slip to fifth in the table, while rivals Lazio leapfrogged them into fourth with a 5-2 win at Spal. Or Spa. Now, mate, your mate Immobile, I remember you text saying, my mate scored four goals.
He scored four.
Yep. His performance was overshadowed by Nangolan's admission from the Roma side following his behaviour on New Year's Eve. Now, Nangolan looks like he'll be the next big name to leave the club this season, but how good is he?
I like Nangolan.
I like Mars bars, but they're not good for me, are they?
I think he's an all-round midfield player. I think he can...
Really?
Yeah, I do. I really do. His passing can improve. That's the only
thing.
So
he's not an all-round midfielder.
Yeah, but the job that he does in there, he can attack, he can defend, he scores screamers. He's got a bit of nasty street to him that you need as a midfield player. I think he's a really good player. I think he'll suit our league as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do.
So where do you think he's going to go?
Chelsea.
Yeah.
He was linked with Chelsea. I think he's kind of Conte's kind of player.
So they're going to have Kante, Bakayoko, Nainggolan, Fabregas, Drinkwater. Barkley.
They're attacking players. He'll sit in there with Kante. Kante and Nainggolan in the middle of the park with Fabregas.
Crying out loud. This isn't Football Manager.
Why not?
Honestly, how many games have they got this season? They're not going to...
Well, it's not this season, is it? They're going to buy him and have him for the future.
Okay, right, fine, fair enough. Okay, Darren, what do you make of him? Good player or nah?
Very good. I actually rate him. Thank you. I actually believe, though, he'll end up at United.
Okay.
Yeah, something tells me that Jose is going to come in for him and steal him from Conte. You know they've got this little thing going on anyway, so he'd love to get one over.
He loves Conte, Mourinho. So,
yeah, the best mates.
Yeah.
They were pen pals.
Matic hasn't really been the guy that I thought would be for United this season, so there's opportunity to get someone else in there as well.
Okay, interesting. Rod, we haven't spoken about this, but Conte and Mourinho, they're war of words. What do you make of the whole situation? Because I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny. It's little man. It's just where's it going to end? Just fight it out, no?
Yeah.
Just get in a ring, innit?
Give him a pair of gloves each, yeah.
Who's the money on?
Conte. Listen, did you see how far Mourinho went flying when Wenger pushed him a couple of years back?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No.
Jose will bore Conte with his tactics and beat him.
He'll play defensive.
He'll play defensive.
Well, like Mayweather. Mourinho's the Mayweather.
He's got form for gouging eyes out, hasn't he? So he'll be chatting with.
Conte called Mourinho fake? Do you think Conte's going to pull his fake wig off and throw it from Mourinho and distract him?
No, but it's obviously a journalist has told him a wrong story, and he's bit, and obviously Mourinho's bit back, and now he's come back, and we loved it when it was Fergie and with Arsene Wenger. Now it's Conte. It amuses us, doesn't it? From Klopp to Conte. So
he's just picking them all, isn't he? But the thing is, what I found amusing, and I'm not going to mention the journalist's name out of respect, but they said, the LMA should get involved, because this is going too far. And I think that it shows you how times have changed. When Kevin Keegan lost it over the telly, all of us were laughing our asses off, weren't we?
But for me, no, I wasn't laughing.
Well, sorry, mate. But nowadays it's like, that's bullying, and
you can't say this.
Yeah, and this and that, and then okay, I know Conte said that whole thing about the whole dementia thing, and I understand. the context in which he said it, because coming from the Mediterranean, it's a different attitude. But you, when you're in a different country, in a different culture, you can't be saying those kind of things. And I think with Mourinho framing that match fixing there, I think that was, you know, when like you see like rap wars on TV or the, your mama jokes, that was like the mic drop, wasn't it? When he goes, I will never be, I will never be accused of match fixing.
That's what that hit Conte. That was the worst. Oh, it was the fact that he kind of...
He's not letting it go.
Did you listen to the reporter straight afterwards, though, when he said it? I think it's Dennis Law's daughter who does it. And she said, right, that's it now. Anyone just questions about the football? Questions about football?
Brilliant. Absolutely. You're brilliant.
Going now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fantastic. It was really good entertainment. But the thing is, I know Conte was he was acquitted, wasn't he? But he still got 4 months, and he was Juventus manager at the time. So I think there's that thing where it's like, well, he was accused Siena manager at the time. But then he got acquitted while he was Juventus manager. Yeah. So I guess the thing is that, well, Juventus had a bit of previous, didn't they?
Ooh.
So maybe the brown envelope. But I'm not saying it happened. But
personally, you know, the back and forth is okay, but when you start saying match fixing, okay, he got suspended, but you know, I don't think he was ever charged, or so that was a bit below the belt.
He got a 4 month ban.
He was
acquitted, but he got a 4 month ban. I don't know how that works. If you're acquitted, then why are you getting a ban?
Yeah, don't think he was actually directly involved with match fixing, though, was he? Or was he?
He turned a blind eye and knew what was going on, apparently.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. Well, that's just as bad then, so I'm wrong, so yeah.
That doesn't happen in Italy, though, does it? Match fixing?
It's never happened. It's never happened. Right, so I'm going to ask this to yourself and Darren. Betis, they ended Sevilla's unbeaten home run, which stretched back to 29 games in an 8-goal thriller. Now, the game was Vincenzo Montella's first in charge of Sevilla, so a 5-3 loss against their deadly rivals. It isn't the best of starts, is it?
No, it's not. If you want to make an impression, you don't lose to Betis at home, especially by that kind of scoreline, five as well, yeah. Cracking game, cracking derby, cracking atmosphere. It's the kind of games that you love watching. You've got to give Betis credit as well, because they're one of them teams that you just really don't know what you're going to get. Obviously, being a derby, they've turned up, and you know, it's kind of their game of the season as well. But they've beaten Real Madrid and the Bernabeu this season, and they've gone and beaten the biggest rivals as well. So, fair play to them, you know? But cracking game as well.
Mm-hmm. And Darren, what do you make of that performance?
Yeah, well, it was a good game to watch, but awful start for the manager. And you got a question. I watched the game, and some of the defending was atrocious. I like to see a lot of goals in games, but some of the defending was unforgivable. And to lose your first game in the derby, you know the only way, you're making a roll for your back now. Where do you go from it? Because the previous manager shouldn't have gone in the first place.
That's right.
So now fans are waiting for an excuse to get on your back, and you've given them one straight away. So it's an uphill struggle from here. But yeah, give credit to Betis for going there and getting the 5-3 win. You know, great for them, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was happy to see that defending. We're playing them in a few weeks, so I wasn't too bad.
Well, they'll still do you. Don't get it wrong. They'll still do you. Don't worry.
Well, they conceded 3 against Liverpool and scored 3, so I don't know what that says. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your other team, Barcelona. They unveiled Coutinho yesterday. Did he do kick-ups or anything?
He did the kick-ups, but due to his injury, it wasn't nothing flash. It was just very simple, I think 5 or 6 kick-ups and then waving to the crowd and stuff like that. But
he did it better than Paulinho.
Oh, good Lord, that was awful. That was probably the worst I've ever seen. But listen, it worked because he's playing out of his skin now.
That's right. Yeah. I think he's the highest goal-scoring midfielder in La Liga at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, so, but in terms of Coutinho,
Where will he fit in the side?
To me, he's the long-term successor for Iniesta. So I think this gives, because at first I didn't really understand getting him now rather than the summer, because he's cup tied, the league's practically over. But I think he'll play in that central midfield position where Iniesta plays, pushing forward, and it gives Iniesta a chance to rest for the Champions League. Because he can't complete too many games. He's injury prone. He's getting on, resting for the big game against Chelsea. So take him in and out of the team. I think Coutinho's got 2 weeks or 3 weeks in injured until he makes his debut. But he will take with Dembele as well. Occasionally, I believe he'll be part of the front three as well. But mainly in that midfield, that's where they're looking for someone to replace Iniesta, in my opinion.
Long term. Absolutely. And let's switch over to Real Madrid, their deadly rivals, who seem to be a country mile or like a galaxy away from Barcelona at the moment. And Rod, Gareth Wales scored twice in his first La Liga start since September. I mean, this won't make much of a difference to his future at the club, will it? I mean, I think he's going to be out the door in the summer, don't you think?
Yeah, it's looking that way. There could be a big change up in the summer. You know, Ronaldo making the noises like he might be on his way out as well. So, you know, if they keep on losing games like they are, I'm sure Zidane will be out there because they have got an itchy trigger finger at the moment. They don't mind sacking managers. So even though he's got a shot to under his belt, which is just ridiculous, but they like to have managers coming and out. And yeah, Gareth Bale, he's not had a good year, but you know, is he injury prone? Is he not? I'm not sure, but you know, you'd be hesitant to spend big money on him if he keeps on picking up these injuries. If he has a good run now to the end of the summer, then sure, it'd be worth the money. But you know, if he keeps on picking up these injuries, they're not going to get the money back for him. That's for sure.
It's worth the gamble.
I think he's worth a gamble as well. But the thing is, because he doesn't have a World Cup to worry about, he's got the whole summer to get back into fitness and recover from these injuries. It's a 2 month break, isn't it? So let's see, but it depends on the fee that he commands. It depends on wages and which team is going to want to take a punt. And I'm not saying that no teams won't, but
Man United 100%.
If he's fit, well and healthy, if he plays on now to the end of summer and they want to get rid of him, I'm pretty much sure he'll end up at Manchester United.
Yeah, even if United sign Lucas Moura, because it's looking very, very likely it's going to happen.
Yeah. More yes, on the right, yes. Bell on the left.
It's all about Rashford and Martial.
Bench. Whew. Especially Rashford.
Oh, look at this. He's starting to turn.
Playing it. It's this same deal with Jesse Lingard, when people are having a go at Jesse Lingard. Jesse Lingard, throughout his career, is a number 10. He wasn't a left midfielder, he wasn't a right midfielder. So when he had these poor games and people getting on his back, he's still learning that kind of role. But when you stick him in the middle, you're seeing the reaps and the rewards from him now. And it's the same with Rashford. He is ultimately a number, not a winger. So, you know, sometimes you've got to share the load with Lukaku and obviously but have that confidence in Rashford to do that.
I think they're players that can come off the bench and make an impact. I think they're starters. I think you can buy better, like your Bales, like your Lucas Moura's, like your Griezmann's, and then your Rashford's could be on the bench.
Well, I've heard that Griezmann's representatives, their relationship with Barcelona is strained now, and it's looking more likely that he'll be joining United in the summer. That's what I've heard. I don't know how true that is.
I hope you're right.
But I
hope you're right as well.
You don't want him at Barcelona?
No, I don't. I don't see where he fits in that team. When you've got Dembele, Suarez, Messi, you've just bought Coutinho. Who does he replace in that team?
How many years do you think Messi's got left at Barcelona, Darren? Because this is something I'm intrigued, because I mean, you know, some players can go until they're 40 these days, but I can't see Messi staying there till he's like 35, 36.
What is he? What is he? He's just turned 30, is it? I think it is.
Is he
31, something like that. So I think he's got till at least 34, because his style of play, he will drop further back. We've seen what kind of position he can play, any position in that team. So he'll drop back into the Xavi role when his legs start giving up on him, and he'll still be able to put in a great performance. He's not like Cristiano, who relies heavily on his athleticism and stuff like that. So, and we've seen the decline of Cristiano this season, to be honest. But and I think he's on the way down. Whereas Messi, I think, has got at least 3 or 4 years at the top level with Barcelona, in my opinion.
Okay.
See, Barcelona don't play the 4-3-3 kind of anymore. Since Valverde comes, they can play Suarez and maybe Messi in behind, and they kind of rotate the midfield players. So Griezmann could fit in that system. I can't see Griezmann wide left in the three or wide right. I don't think that would work with Griezmann in there.
He'll be effectively like a number 10.
Number 10, yeah. But I can see maybe Griezmann in behind a Suarez or a Messi. That could definitely work, yeah.
Well, so when you've got quality players, they should be able to play everywhere, to be fair. Let's be 100% honest.
Absolutely.
And, gents...
You say that, but if you're paying big, big money, you want to play in that position.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Really? I agree, 100%. You want him playing in his best position because you're going to get the most out of him, or you think you'd get the most out of him. Look at Varane. What a fantastic footballer he was. But at United, he was played that position, apart from in Europe, where he excelled. Go figure.
Yeah, well, England played poor scores in left midfield. Figure that out.
No, there you go. We can go on all night about this, can't we?
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about another quality player. Supposedly quality player. Wesley Snyder, he finally got his January move, but it wasn't to Manchester United. He signed for Richard Keys' new local team, Al Gharafah, in Qatar. Now, Snyder said, "It's a nice adventure and a fun challenge." A fun challenge, I love this. Is Snyder one of the many footballers who made a living on the back of a couple of decent seasons, chaps? What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Oh, 100%.
Thank goodness we agree on something tonight.
Makes a change, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. He says it with a smile.
It does, yeah. I don't usually like agreeing with you. But, what did he have? Two, three good years at Inter?
If that. Yeah, that treble winning season.
He did. It wasn't great at Madrid, was it?
No.
At Ajax, he was okay, and then he got his move. Galatasaray went for the check. Nice, he went for the check. And now he's gone for the check again in Qatar. So, like I said, I agree with you. Pains me to say that, but yeah.
Thank you. Darren?
I fully agree. I think he's a bit of a bottle job, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think he should have graced the Premier League ages ago when teams were after him. But like I said, he made those couple moves for the money. And listen, as far as he's concerned, he's paid off because, you know, he's getting richer and richer. But he can never be classed as an elite player, in my opinion. He had that great treble winning season at Inter. But other than that, I don't even remember any other season for Ajax or any other team that he actually excelled. So, to me, big disappointment. Mm. Very overhyped as well.
Darren, do you know why he never joined Man United?
Why?
Because United never paid for a plane for him. He wanted the private jet, didn't he? He wanted United to... True story.
That just goes to show, innit?
That's why he never joined United.
Wow. Rod, would you have had Schneider at United? Would he have made that much of a difference? I mean, they're talking about him possibly replacing Paul Scholes. I don't see how you can replace Paul Scholes. I mean, Anderson gave it a good crack, but he ended up mostly in Nando's. But
no, it's just one of them. It's one of them Karol Pawlowski things. You have a good couple of seasons, and you know you end up at a big club, but you're nearly not good enough to be at that club, like Morgan Schneiderlin. You know, there's players down the line that you can go on. Schneider's a bit better than Morgan Schneiderlin, but yeah, he's just a good Holland, decent footballer. He's just obviously a journeyman. He's a mercenary, as Jan says. That's just a joke. Just to not come somewhere because he won't play for a private plane.
Yeah,
you know, he's not going to complain about length, about 4 foot.
Yeah, he's in Qatar now, so he's probably making 10 times more than he made at Real Madrid. But the thing is, I can't think of any standout moments in his career to say, oh, you know, Wesley Snyder, he changed the game with a pass or a goal or anything. You look at that World Cup final.
I'll tell you one pass I remember he made to Samuel Eto'o away at the bridge, and he put him through, and Eto'o finished for Inter Milan.
Okay.
Aside from that,
I didn't even remember that. You did. You got a better memory than I do. But you know, for me, I never understood the hype about him. I know I saw him play for Ajax in the Amsterdam tournament for United when we went out there, and he scored the cracking goal against him actually. But he reminded me, no disrespect, Dan, a little bit of Coutinho, where you kind of knew what he was going to do. He's going to bring the ball inside and wallop it, and he didn't do it enough. He didn't contribute anything majorly important for the national team. I was saying before, in the World Cup final, when you're expecting your big players to turn up, I know the Dutch have got a reputation for not turning up, but you'd have thought that he'd take the game by the scruff of the neck in the middle of the park, and he was overrun by the Barcelona a lot, obviously, but it's just something about him. I could never really see the hype, and every time he was linked with United, it was like, okay, well, it's not going to happen, and thank goodness for it.
He's a luxury player, first of all. And second...
But what's luxurious about a player that doesn't do anything?
Well...
Is it because he's got a long name or he's got a J in the middle of his name?
A player like that, if he's going to join your team, will disrupt your tactics, your... I remember Berkovic. He was one of them players that you had to play a certain system just to play him. Otherwise, you couldn't play him. Schneider was one... You couldn't play him in a 4-4-2 because you got missing. You know, you couldn't play him in a defensive job because he wouldn't do it. So you'd have to change probably, maybe play a 4-5-1 to play him in behind the striker so that you can play him. Otherwise, you couldn't fit him in the team. He wasn't somebody who's going to play wide left or wide right because he won't track back. And his attitude stank as well. So would you really want somebody like that in your team? Maybe that's why a lot of the big clubs didn't go for him because they looked at his whole kind of profile and thought, this player won't be any good for us.
That's a point.
He's a bit of... He's a bit of a YouTube player, isn't he? Like, if you put all his goals and his stuff, like passes, he look amazing.
Yeah.
But he's not the player for the big stage, is he? Like, when you want someone to, you know, grab the game by the scruff of the neck, dictate the game, control the game, he's not that player. But he'll score the odd worldie from distance, and, you know, people start thinking he's amazing, but he's not consistent, far from it.
Yeah, to me, he was a poor man's Raphael van der Vaart, and he wasn't. Ooh. He didn't pull up trees.
That was good. That's a good one.
They didn't get along, did they? Van der Vaart and Schneider.
I don't know. Nope. But we've said this before.
We said it last week. We even had a
Dutch football agent on, and he can't pinpoint why the Dutch just don't get on. Honestly. So yeah, it's a funny one. It's a really funny one. But you know what? As I said, he's in Qatar now. He's probably playing against who?
Xavi.
Is Xavi?
Xavi's outside.
Oh, well, that'd be fun.
Xavi was still schooling, mate.
Yeah.
You're probably right.
He's still scoring goals, believe it or not, Xavi.
That doesn't surprise me in that league.
Yeah.
Come on now.
He takes their penalties as well, but yeah, anyway.
There you go. Right, and that's pretty much it for our show. It's been a very eventful one. I think we've done very, very well in a short period of time, 55 minutes. Excellent. Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, buddy. Thank you very much for your time. It's been, you know...
No problem. It's been a pleasure coming with me. Yeah, definitely. I'll be there. Listen, whenever you're ready to have me back on, I'll be there, mate. Enjoyed it. Loved it.
Well, I'll hold you to that.
We could talk about the Keegan rant next
time. We could talk about Keegan rant. Absolutely.
Anything but that.
Excellent. Rod, thanks very much for your time, mate.
No problem, party time.
Brilliant. Right, before I let you guys go, do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handles? Darren, you start, mate.
Yeah, it's at DD40Factory. Use the hashtag footy on top.
Excellent. And do you have a personal one?
Yeah, it's, if you're a Ronaldo fan, as in the real Ronaldo, it's Il Phenomeno with an F, 25. So you should know how to spell that. But yeah, Il Phenomeno 25.
Excellent. Rod?
Rod James Giggs. R-O-D James Giggs.
Great stuff. And yours?
Yannick is J. And I've left Mourinho alone this week.
You've left him alone. Actually, I'll tell you what, one more thing before I hit the stop button. And I've done a Twitter poll on this, and I think the answer was yes. And I asked, and this is because of I was on the fifth official podcast the other day, and we were basically talking about R9 and would he do well in this era? Would he surpass Messi and Ronaldo? And I think 57% said yes, and 43% said no. Would R9 rip Messi and Ronaldo's records to bits if he was playing these days in peak form?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that the game is different to what he did. There was a lot more physical when Ronaldo played. Now it's a lot more softer, so to speak. So I think he'll do a lot better.
Excellent.
I really do.
Rod?
Yeah, there was, like Jan said, there's a lot more softer and a lot more tougher in them days, and there was a lot more better defenders around in them days, a lot better. You know, your Yaps, Dams, your Costa Curtis, your Nesters, you know, your top class centre halves, and that's what you had to come against. You know, these days they're coming against, I don't even know, you know, John Stones, Smalling.
Perrin.
Oh.
Well,
yeah, there's a big massive difference. Them centre halves I've just mentioned would just walk into any team in the world. So, you know, they don't make centre halves like that anymore. Rio Ferdinand, you know, and Ronaldo run him to bits and scored an hat trick on him, so he was one of the best centre halves in the world. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
He got an hat trick against him.
That's right.
Even though Barthez was in the net, he's about 4.
Darren.
Yeah, well, to me, R9 is my favourite footballer of all time, so it's a no brainer for me.
Even ahead of Messi.
Even ahead of Messi. Listen, no one competes with R9. Best finisher you'll ever see. Best striker you'll ever see in a game. And if he's your favourite player's favourite player. And like I said, all those defenders, if you ask about when they faced him, they had nightmares, mate. They had nightmares. So, and he'd walk all over all these current defenders as well. So the game's too soft now anyway. So he conquered Italy when it was the hardest defence, hardest league to conquer, to be honest. He'd done it in Spain, everywhere he's gone. And obviously, at an international level. So yeah. I think he'd be putting Messi and Cristiano in his back pocket, to be honest.
Great stuff. And I'm going to leave this to Leon Knight, because obviously he's a big R9 fan. I'm going to tweet him. I'm going to mention this this quote from Darren. I'm going to say congratulations, Leon. He actually popped the question, and he's going to get the old ball and chain. So there you go. And that's how we end the show on a very happy note. Till next time, adios.